This is Aiden Knight, and you are listening to Wrestle Life Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Wrestle Life Radio, episode 172. If you can't count. We're getting closer to episode 200.
Yeah, we got like
Micah. Joining Micah today. How's 20, it going?
28 episodes. Can I do math? I can count and I can do math. Wow, look at that. Yeah, I'm back. I'm here. I'm here to do all your math for you. Don't worry. I've got it under control.
Yeah, me no do math good. So
yeah, we need our real mathematicians to go out there. What, 28 episodes from now, what would that be? Let's see. We got All Out. We got Full Gear. Probably next Revolution. I'm going to say Revolution. Probably around there. So be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, hopefully it lines up. That would be perfect. It lined up on Revolution.
If it lined up on Revolution, we should have a live show at Revolution. In front of the crowd.
Sure.
Screaming friends all over the place.
Yeah, I'm a designer. I don't usually do a whole lot of math. I was actually good at math in school. I just can't do math. Like, I have to have a sheet of paper. Like, I have to be able to write it down. But at the same time, the last math class I had was my freshman year of college. Like, I found out graphic design only needed one college math course. I did it my first semester, and I was just like, done with math forever.
But you haven't done math since you were like 19.
Nope.
Yeah.
Dude, my very first Christmas at Stephanie's house, her mom's a teacher, and we've talked about this with her a little bit and joked about it, but I mean, she always, they do like fun stuff at Christmas, like unique ways to open presents and stuff like that. And her mom decided it would be fun that, hey, I'm going to put together some math problems to figure out what presents
to
what person. I was just like, oh no. I
don't need a present this year. It's fine.
I was like the last one to finish. I was so bad. It's terrible. I embarrassed myself.
And so what did she like assign you? Was it like algebra where like it equaled K-Y-L-E or?
It was just basically addition, but it was just like big numbers and there were a bunch of them to add. So you had I had to write down like all the numbers on the paper and like try to count them out, cause I can't do it in my head. And so I was having to add like 20 numbers together and then like carry the number up to the top and rinse and repeat.
Yeah. If I can't do the math in my head, it gets calculated. I can't tell you the last time I wrote down a math problem.
Yeah, so it was a struggle.
But they always said, you won't have a calculator in your pocket. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're wrong.
Yeah, every American. We've got
they switched it up by doing a Common Core math to balance out. They're like, well, okay, well, they have calculators now. We got to make it hard for them.
Yeah, we got to make this difficult for them. We can't have these millennials getting off easy. Anyways, this is Wrestle Life Radio, where we talk about wrestling. If you're just joining,
so, hey, we got to say, speaking of math, what were the ratings, the numbers for AEW this week?
It was 936 overall viewers, so a little bit down, but not bad considering that last week was like a huge pay per view show. Yeah. I think last week was right over a million. And they haven't released like what the official ranking, like I don't know if they were number two, number three in the demo or what. I'm assuming they're back down to number two or number three. But yeah, I don't think that's bad at all. It was a very stacked show, mind you.
But, yeah, it actually really was.
It wasn't blood and guts, wasn't, you know, some special edition.
It was pretty stacked though, if you looked at kind of everything that happened. There's a lot going on. So one reason I brought up the numbers as well, we talked about it last week, but they actually touted it this week on AEW. They were the number one ranked show on cable last week. And I know, like, you know, it's they haven't beat WWE numbers or something like that, but it's still a big deal that, like, I mean, I don't ever remember like Impact being the number one cable wrestling show the week that it was on or something. Like,
yeah,
it's still a big deal.
Interestingly enough, I think Dave Meltzer pointed out last week, Raw was the number one show on Monday, AEW was the number one show on Tuesday, and Friday Night SmackDown was the number one show on Friday. So that's pretty crazy. People saying, oh, wrestling's not what it used to be. I mean, they're still winning their ratings on their nights. That's pretty big. You know, there's not 4 million people watching, but there's also like so many different ways to consume media nowadays. Like people aren't watching TV like they used to. The fact that a million people sat in their homes and turned on TNT. Like I watch AEW every week. I have never watched AEW on TNT cable ever. So that is the fact that a million people sat down in front of a TNT broadcast. That's crazy.
And I was one of them.
I mean, I've watched on the TNT app. I've watched on Fight TV. Never actually anything that would affect the ratings. So, I mean, you got to take that in consideration too. How many people are actually watching AEW? How many people are actually watching WWE? And this is just American viewers too. I mean, there's still a lot of people out there that like wrestling. It's just not so mainstream anymore. But I think it's working its way towards it, man. Especially with the internet culture and everything around it. I think it's working its way around. I think wrestling is probably, at least in my lifetime, better than it's ever been.
So yeah, we're going to talk about internet culture in a little bit.
Yeah, and also we're never going to hear the end of it ever. They're always, every single advertisement, every Jericho promo, number one show on cable. It doesn't matter that it only happened once, and it may never happen again. We'll see. We're going to hear about it for the rest of our lives.
At least from MJF, if anybody else. It's going to be him.
It's true, yeah. Yeah, he's going to tout it. Jericho's going to tout it. I think Cody, who is it touted this week? Wasn't Cody.
It was MJF, because he said he was the MJF. Demo god.
Yep, that's right.
So, but yeah.
It makes more sense for the heel to do it.
Yeah, so not a big step down this week, but I mean, it's understandable when Blood and Guts was, you know, basically a glorified, you know, like almost like a pay-per-view on TV. I mean, you know, pay-per-view level match on TV. So, you know, having that on, you would expect to get a little bit of a bump. And so they took a little bit of dip this week. But honestly, in my opinion, the show didn't take a dip in value because it was a really good show.
Yeah, very, very good show. I think we should get right into it.
Yeah.
We started out with the IWGP United States Championship.
Right out of the gate.
Right out of the gate. Actually, it didn't even start with the normal intro. It actually started with the backstage, like side-by-side of Yuji Nagata and Jon Moxley, which I thought was a really cool way to open the show.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was really cool. And
it seemed really retro. I don't know. I feel like they used to do that back in the day more.
Yeah. And they should do it more often with, you know, big matches like this, because it's very reminiscent of like they do it in UFC a lot, where you have the main event, you know, card, and the main event of the night, that's, you know, the reason everybody's there. And throughout the show, they show like the big fight guys arriving, them, you know, shadow boxing in the back or hitting pads before, like, you know, just builds anticipation of this is what we came to see. So, yeah, doing stuff like this always kind of elevates things and makes it, you know, seem bigger. So,
yeah. And it definitely had a big fight feel. The whole show was just top to bottom, just great. But yeah, I had never watched New Japan. My experience with Japanese wrestling is the Joshi wrestlers in AEW and the few New Japan guys we've seen. I mean, Kenny Omega, obviously, he's an American, or actually Canadian, but he's very New Japan centric. Like, he's a New Japan guy. You look at Kenny Omega, he's New Japan, right? But man, I had never seen Yuji Nagata because I didn't watch WCW way back in the day, but I really like Yuji Nagata. I know he's like 52 or something.
Yeah.
But he came out and I'm like, okay, this guy actually seems legit. Like, I don't know, maybe he's like a New Japan Kurt Angle. I don't know. That's what he came off to me as, like a tried and true technical wrestler. Yeah, really enjoyed it. He came out looking great. He got a huge pop. And then we go backstage to Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston. And tell us about that, Kyle. How did they come out?
So, yeah, Yuji Nagata comes out. He's with Ren Narita. So they make their way down. And then busting through his little side entrance door is Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston to a new theme song. It was Wild Thing by the Trogs.
It was.
We kind of talked about this amongst ourselves, but as I told Micah when we got on, or you know, just to record the show, I said, "Man, I haven't heard anybody say that they actually like this." I've heard people say it's there. They did it. Like Tony Khan, you know, bought the rights to it. He's buying rights for these guys' music, which is great. But I don't think I've heard anybody say like, "Yeah, it's perfect. Like it's great. Like I love it." I've either heard it's there or this sucks.
Yeah, I hope this is a one-off thing because apparently it's like a tribute to, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, Oneida in New Japan. Like that's one of John Moxley's favorite wrestlers and he came out to Wild Thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there, it's like an homage to him. But it just does not, first of all, it doesn't fit John Moxley. Second of all, it's not a good entrance song. It's like super slow and just like, just, I don't know. There's no power to it at all. Whereas like before with like the fuzz of the amplifier as it's getting plugged in and like the feedback and everything was such a good, and then just going into that heavier riff, it was perfect for Moxley. But yeah, I don't care for this at all. Maybe it's just a one-off. I hope it is. It doesn't fit him at all, in my opinion.
Yeah,
those are like 1944. It's like a 1944 Western song.
Yeah, it's old. I mean, the only thing you say is like Moxley is, you know, one way to describe him would be a Wild Thing, but yeah, like it's just, I agree. Like it's just not his other song. I mean, it is kind of generic, but it's got a lot more energy to it, and it's fast paced. It's hard hitting, which. It's, you know, what I think of when, you know, John Mox is coming down, he's kind of got like a fast step to him. He's ready to just get to the ring and beat up on somebody. So it always fit him. So yeah, this, it's just slow. Like it feels like it should be fast paced, but it's not. And it's like, it's very weird. Like I'd almost rather hear like a cover, like a more modern cover of it or something that's like faster and like a little better. Cause it's like you said, it's not very heavy cause it's like an old song. So it doesn't have like that heavy hit to it. And
yeah, 1966, by the way.
Yeah, it really reminded me of sometimes on UFC, there will be guys like it happens a lot with like, so like you got like the US crowd or something who's like, you know, pumped, they're jazzed, they're ready to see these guys come out. If a fighter's got a good entrance theme, like it pumps the crowd up. I mean, much the same thing as wrestlers, like it pumps the crowd up. But every now and then, because Dana White basically just says, hey, like pick what music you want. Like you can do whatever you want. Either like it happens a lot with like Brazilians because they'll pick like just like a Brazilian song that's just like not, you know, not like an American pop or like rock song or anything. It's just like very, you know, very Brazilian and something like that. Or either just a random song that just doesn't even get you pumped up. It's just like something the fighter might just like, but it's just not a great interest song. So you just kind of, you're like, well, okay. Like it's just like a letdown. Like it kind of takes the energy out, and it's pretty much what this did, which is the opposite of what you want in a pro wrestling theme song.
Yeah, don't love it at all. But we'll see. Hopefully next week if it stays. And I mean, if he bought the rights to it, it probably will. I'm sure he forked out a bunch of cash for it.
That's what I'm thinking.
I don't know though. How much is the rights to a 1966 song?
And Moxley's the type of guy who's probably like, I mean, if anybody's going to not listen to what people think about his entrance music and just do what he wants, it's going to be John Moxley. So if he wants it to stay and it wasn't just a one-time tribute, it's going to be back.
Yep, that's for sure. But yeah, let's get into the match. I thought that it was a very good match, incredibly physical. Just, I mean, definitely a New Japan style match. They actually fought to New Japan rules. So it had a 20-second count out. Each competitor had a second in the corner. Obviously, Moxley's was Eddie Kingston's, and I cannot even begin to remember the guy's name for Yuji Nagata.
It was Rin Narita.
Yeah. So and, it was a very New Japan style match.
What's his name?
Romero
was in the crowd.
Rocky Romero was there in the crowd. Lance Archer was watching on, a former IWGP US champion. Yeah, this was really history making for me to have a New Japan title defended in the U.S. on Turner television. I think that's pretty cool. And it's really showing where wrestling is going into a more like, I saw a post today where it's like WWE is entertainment, like it's WWE, but AEW, Impact, New Japan, they're wrestling.
Yeah.
And it's all wrestling. So they're all together. Whereas WWE is WWE. Like they're just sports entertainment. That's their thing.
They're Fiend and witchcraft Alexa stuff.
Yeah. Which I like as long as it's good, but we're not even going to begin to get into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the Forbidden Door is open. I thought this was a really good match. Anything particular you wanted to go over?
Nagata was just very impressive for his age.
Yeah.
The one thing, like, he wasn't moving as fast, obviously, because he's, you know, like 50 something.
Oh, yeah. Nobody expects him to.
Right. So, but I mean, what impressed me was like, he's a little bit slow, and Moxley did a lot of the heavy, you know, like the heavy lifting on things. And like Nagata would, when he whipped into the ropes, he would just kind of, you know, show him to the ropes, and Moxley would kind of, you know, take off running and hit him. So, like, in that aspect, his age showed. But when he threw his strikes, his punches, and his kicks, it was like he was 20 years old. Like he was just like killing Moxley with his punches, kicks, to the point where he cut him open later in the match. So it was just a brawl between these two. It was, you know, really fun. It was a great opener. It was just, I mean, if anything, it was like, I wouldn't say it was too short, but the way that it kind of, you know, climax to the end where Moxley just ended up hitting a paradigm shift to pick up the win. I almost felt a little bit like I would have liked to seen it go a little bit, like a couple more minutes longer. Like not necessarily have a false finish there, but have like him reverse the paradigm shift and go a little bit, you know, do some finish teases or something like that towards the end and then go to the paradigm shift. So I think a couple more minutes would have been a little bit better, but we had a lot on this show, so it's kind of understandable, but just a really fun opener. And even after the match, Moxley and Nagata bowed to each other, showing each other respect. So just all around, great opener. Just awesome. Lived up to the hype for sure.
Yeah. And Excalibur, of course, did a great job informing everyone of all the history and everything of the U.S. title they needed to know, which I thought was great. And yeah, I thought this made for a really good opener, really great start to a great show. And then we go backstage to the Inner Circle being interviewed by Alex Marvez.
Well, three-fifths of the Inner Circle.
Yeah. Ortiz, Jake Hager, and Sammy Guevara. Ortiz just starts out talking about how Santana has been detained at the order of MJF because Santana stabbed him with a fork. And he said he's lucky that he did not scoop his eyeball out and eat it. And like, man, Ortiz just really sold that. I believe that Santana would have scooped out his eyeball and ate it with a fork.
These guys need more promo time because Ortiz is awesome. Yeah, man,
Ortiz, so good. Even Jake Hager did good in the segment.
And really everybody did. I mean, I think Sammy was the weakest out of everybody, but Ortiz and Hager like killed it. They both cut great promos here. And Sammy just finished it out. It wasn't bad, but I mean, Ortiz and Hager were fired up and they cut great promos. It was awesome.
Yeah, I think the only reason that I think Sammy's was a little bit weaker is because Sammy kind of had a script that he had to follow through to finish up the promo.
Right, yeah.
Whereas the other two were kind of freeballing.
Yeah.
And as we know, freeballing generally goes better. And so Sammy Guevara speaks up and he basically just demands a rematch from the Pinnacle. So we're going to be working to that. For those that don't know, Santana is not actually in jail. He unfortunately was injured during the Blood and Guts match. Jericho dislocated his shoulder, or his elbow, I'm sorry. And Santana, when he fell between the ring and the cage, which I knew when I saw it, I was like, ooh, him and Ortiz both had that happen to him. And I was like, oh, that does not look fun.
Yeah.
Apparently hurt his back. And Jericho said he actually wasn't even able to walk after the show. Like he was able to walk, but like it was impeded. Like he was having issues walking.
Yeah, I've had back spasms from time to time, and it makes things, when your back is not healthy, it makes it pretty hard to walk. So
it makes it even harder to wrestle.
Yeah, I could definitely understand when you got the adrenaline going, you can probably make it through, but once things start tensing up and if you have spasms or anything like that, like it's debilitating. So I totally get it.
Yeah. And so after that, we have Cody Rhodes coming out to make his AEW Double or Nothing announcement, which, of course, we all know he's going to announce that he's wrestling Anthony Ogogo, because obviously that's where they're leading to with this. And this has been quite the cause for controversy.
Which
now,
I cannot
during
believe.
During the show, Kyle and Matthew and I have a text chain going, and Kyle actually messaged us and was like, man, this promo is great. Matthew was like, I know, it's even better than the Silver Spoons promo, which is like Cody's top tier promo. And I actually wasn't watching the show at this point, but I was like, okay, I'm looking forward to this. I watched it and I was like, man, I got goosebumps listening to this promo. And then after the show, I got on the internet and people were talking about how they were turning off the channel. They hated this promo. Cody Rhodes is Satan. This is terrible. They can't believe he said the things that he said. I mean, I was flabbergasted. I could not believe it. Kyle, why don't you take us through this promo? And if you can remember everything, all the terrible, terrible things that Cody said.
I even have him... Because from time to time when I don't actually have my own notes, I'll go and find them somewhere else. Whoever wrote these notes actually wrote down that USA versus the world stuff does not work in 2021. And I'm just like, what? I just don't understand what people got from this. That just like, I mean, we've had people talk about the, you know, USA versus the world, people talking about race. And I'm just, I love this promo. Like, so basically what happens is Cody comes out. At first, I almost didn't know what he's talking about, because he started talking about, you know, how proud he was to be an American, and prompted some USA chants, which, you know, is understandable.
Well, let's lay out the table here, because a lot of people said this promo was all over the place and out of nowhere or whatever. The last time we saw Cody on TV, the guy with the American flag tattooed on his neck, right?
Yes.
The last time we saw Cody on TV, he got knocked out by Anthony Ogogo and covered up by the Union Jack, which is the British flag, okay? And then we start here. So I think it does make sense where he's starting. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Just kind of laying that out there.
Well, and also Anthony Ogogo is also like, you know, talk down Americans and stuff like that.
Yeah, on so, Twitter and everything. He's been going really hard at it.
Right. So it makes sense. So I don't understand where like, it, yeah. So basically, like we said, you know, Cody says, you know, he makes mention that, you know, Ogogo's been, you know, talking down the U.S. But he brings up that, this is actually where he makes his money in America. It's where, you know, he gets afforded the right to say those things because, you know, he's in America.
And I loved his line where he said that Anthony Ogogo did not come to America to live the British dream.
Yeah.
And that got a huge pop.
And
it's true. People come here because it's called the American dream.
Yeah. And
a lot of time people forget it's still a really great country.
And he even says, like, it's lunch. Not, you know, I'm not talking down on, you know, England, not saying it's disparaging them, but, you know, he's coming here and he's making American money. He's, you know, he's doing the, you know, all these things. And, you know, he gets his check from the U.S. Treasury. Like he talks
about how, you know, America has their problems. He's not trying to, he's like, yeah, just look at the last election. Look at our antiquated two-party system. We have our problems. I'm not afraid to admit it. Like, it's not like he's all like, we have no issues, America great, rest of the world suck.
Yeah, like it was a very, that's one reason I enjoyed it a lot. It sounded like an honest, you know, honest promo. And I think anybody, no matter what side of like politics you're on or, you know, whatever, that's something you could, you know, any reasonable person could get behind. It's like, yeah, we do have issues. And, you know, there's different ways we think we should go about it. That's understandable, but. You know, to be an American is to say, be able to say those things and to feel that way. And, you know, Cody, he brings up that, you know, Bruno Sammartino was an Italian American immigrant who came here mm-hmm. and, you know, did great things. And so he's basically saying that it's not that, you know, because Ogogo is an immigrant that, you know, he's, you know, he can't come over here and, you know, do great things. Cause as he said, Bruno Sammartino, he also talks about Shad Khan coming as an immigrant and basically being able to build AEW, which
yeah.
Makes
and
sense.
As a person who spent a lot of time in Jacksonville, obviously Matthew lives there. We visit, I don't know, 4 or 5 times a year. And people in Jacksonville may not know what AEW is. Everyone in Jacksonville knows who Shad Khan is. Yeah. Like, he's a big deal in Jacksonville. So that little name drop, which wasn't even a name drop. he just mentions a Pakistani immigrant who came in and invented the One Piece bumper and made Jacksonville into what it is. I mean, you know,
yeah,
it's not even, it's, I don't know. This whole promo I felt was about progress, was about how people coming to America is what makes America what it is, how great America can be, and how basically the bad guy in the situation is coming in and bad-mouthing America and talking about how terrible it is. And people hated it.
Yeah. We also need to mention,
I saw people calling Cody racist. And yeah, let's get into that.
He got really emotional, actually, because he was saying 60 years ago, America was segregated. But soon, him, a white man, and his black wife are going to give birth to a beautiful, both black and white baby who will celebrate both cultures. And that's a beautiful thing. And it is. And
yeah, he like got legitimately choked up, which he often does. He gets super emotional in his promos, and which I think is one reason he's so great. It makes me uncomfortable, but it's very, very, I don't know. Maybe emotions make me uncomfortable. Maybe that's a deep seated issue.
That sounds like
but
it.
Yes. Yeah, maybe. No, and,
but that's what I love about it, because
that's part of what makes his promo so good.
I love, you know, stuff that's genuine and honest. And that's what this felt like. Like, I felt like it was somebody not saying, I mean, you see like in WWE all the time, like they won't mention COVID. They won't talk about, you know, things that are going on in the world. Or if they do, they're so like, you know, out of touch when they talk about it. But like, this was a guy coming out saying, you know, we're not perfect, but you know, we also have a lot of great things, and we're, you know, going in a great direction. And you know, there've been great people that have come to this country and done great things. And I'm going to defend that against this guy who's saying that, you know, we're all trash basically. So,
yeah, I don't get it at all. I know that I'm coming from a position of privilege. I'm a white male in the Southern United States, right? I'm a straight white male in the Southern United States. Mm-hmm. Like, I've got all the privileges you can get, right?
Right. Same here.
I check all the boxes.
Yes.
And I happen to like America. America's always been good to me. I understand there's a lot of people out there who feel like America hasn't been good to them. And there's some people out there that obviously they've had issues with government and things of that sort. But I don't like our government a lot of times, right? I don't like what Congress does. I don't like what Senate does. I don't like what the president does a lot of times, but I love America. There's a difference. Our country is not our government. Our country is the people in the country and the values in which it was founded on. Because there may be things going on that we don't like, but it's still us. It's still America as a whole, people from all over the world coming together. And I think a lot of people forget about that. Look back at 2001, man. Everybody, I mean, look at WWE, what they did specifically. Like, everybody's USA, USA. Nationalism was all over the charts. And people say nationalism like it's a bad thing now. Like, oh God, how dare you think about your country? I don't get it. I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense to me. I love this promo. I thought it was great. I couldn't believe he was saying the things that he was saying when he was saying them. Like, I was like, I can't believe he's saying this, because I did think there were some people out there that weren't going to like it. I didn't think it was going to have like 3,500 upvotes on the Squared Circle subreddit. And like, it was going to be the number one talked about thing this week. Everybody hated it. It was the worst Cody promo of all time. It was all over the place. I thought it was great. I really liked it. I think people are going to hate Cody no matter what. Like, I always joke that Cody's a heel, and people are like, oh, this just cements that he really is the heel. We're going to all be rooting for Anthony Ogogo, because Cody does act like a heel a lot of times in his matches, right? But this was a babyface promo if I've ever seen it. A lot of people say it's out of touch because of 2020 or 2021 or whatever the year we're in. But it's like, no, like, why is it bad to hate America? Like, why is it so bad that a face can't make a promo saying that he loves America? I don't get it.
Yeah, me either. It wasn't even to me the promo that was saying like that I love America and I'm gonna like. It was just he was basically challenging what Anthony Ogogo has been saying. Cody didn't just come in and say this guy is British and I'm gonna fight for America. It's based
on...
He
didn't just come out and start bad-mouthing this guy, saying how bad his teeth were,
or anything
like that. It's based
on what the other guy's been saying. Like, it makes total sense. Like, it never...
It's a response.
Yes, it never felt to me like this was a America... Like, make America great again, rah, 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 like, thing. Like, it never came off that way to me. And I...
It definitely did have a very, like, I'm running for president kind of, like, pattern to it, because Cody's promos generally do...
The Rock's got a whole TV show that's talking about him running for president. And everybody loves
basically.
It. Like, what?
Yeah. Well, it's because, anyway. I don't know. I didn't have an issue with this at all. But he does go up to wrap up the promo. He says that at Double or Nothing, Anthony Ogogo won't be heading against the American Nightmare. But for one night only, and nothing other than name, there won't be anything different about presentation. But for one night only, Anthony Ogogo will be going up against the American Dream, which just like brings this whole thing into a full circle, because Anthony Ogogo is attacking America. He's attacking the American way. He's attacking the American Dream, which was Cody Rhodes' father's name, obviously, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. I just thought it was full circle. I thought it was a great way to – I got chills when he said it. Like, I was like, I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Like, he's looking at the camera. I was like, okay, this is for sure coming. He said it, and I was like, oh, yes, that's so good. I like it.
It was like when, Captain America said Avengers Assemble.
Yeah.
Like, you knew it was coming, but you loved feeling the anticipation and then finally getting it. Like, yeah, you knew he was about to say it, and everybody loved it. And when Justin Roberts says it at Double or Nothing, it's going to get a huge pop. Like,
I hope he comes out in polka dots.
Unless Reddit people and Twitter people are in attendance and they just boo him. But
I'm going to be there. And if they are, I'm going to throw my soda at them. I may get thrown out, but it'll be worth it.
Yeah, it's your American right to go to prison for that.
This is the American Dream.
I can hurl my
Coke ball at you. I'm going to throw my soda at whoever I want.
Yes.
Yeah, we're like 30 minutes in. I think we've talked about this enough, but I thought it was great. And if you disagree with us, shoot us a message. Let us know. Yeah. Let us know why you felt the way you did.
I would genuinely like to talk to somebody about like why they think it isn't appropriate, or why
I've not seen a good argument about it. I've seen people saying that Cody is racist. I've seen people saying he supports Donald Trump. I've seen people saying that he is, I don't know, a word I'd never even heard of, but it's like a bad version of nationalist. But like, I haven't seen a genuine, like, I didn't like this because this, this, and this. I've heard people say that it was sloppy, that it was all over the place. I listened to it 3 times. I didn't find that at all. I thought it was well put together. I liked it.
And if you think this is like a Republican-Democrat thing, just go listen to Joe Biden's last speech he gave in front of the House and the Senate, because he basically wrapped up everything that he talked about in addressing them and basically gave a America rah-rah speech. And he got both sides of the aisle to stand up and cheer. So... everybody likes America who's living in it for the most part. We have problems, and we don't always agree with each other, and that's fine. That's what makes us Americans. But
Like I was telling Kyle earlier today, I think it's because a lot of the internet, you have like the QAnon people on the far right, and then you have, there's not a word for them, but like the far left over here that like hates America and they're terrible and they're trash. And then you have the QAnon people who hate America and they're terrible and they're trash. And that's all that's on Reddit. I think that's just the majority of the issue.
It's, very reasonable.
I'm sure most of the people listening at home probably enjoyed it.
I would imagine so. Most wrestling fans probably did.
I didn't even look at Twitter because I didn't even want to open that can of worms.
Yeah. So after this, we had a video promo for the SCU. Basically saying they don't like the Young Bucks attitude recently. And so that's all that's up. All that's left for them to do is to beat the Bucks. And obviously they mentioned their ultimatum, that if they lose, they will disband. And this brings us to Young Bucks versus SCU. Don Callis also came out on commentary. Good Brothers were accompanying the Young Bucks ringside. So SCU comes out. They looked great. Young Bucks come out. They look like jerks. They got new shoes on. They are just like the best heels. This match,
they're so good as heels.
This match was awesome. It was just basically what happened was it was just Young Bucks versus SCU to start, and very typical of what they would do, going really well until On the outside, Christopher Daniels got super kicked into the post, and did he cut? Like, I actually didn't see it, and I didn't go back and rewind. I'm imagining he cut himself.
I think he bladed. Yeah, I think he bladed, but I think he went Dustin Rhodes and bladed way too deep.
Yeah, I mean, and that happens sometimes.
Or hit like an artery or something, because it was like squirting out.
This was like, the only thing that I could think was like worse was when Vince McMahon did it, and it was just like pouring buckets. I mean, this was pouring pretty good though. So it was very similar to like Eddie Guerrero. Like, I mean, just pouring blood out of this man. And
yeah,
it basically took him out of the match.
It made for some really great visuals though.
Yeah. And to the point where Nick was like kind of going after him, but then he saw he's bleeding so bad, he just left him away, and he just jumped over the apron, looked at the camera, and was like, "Ooh, it's done. This guy's over with." And just like left him, which I was like, hey, that was a great audible, because he's probably going to do some more stuff on the outside, but he was like, all right, I'm gonna let this guy bleed because he's bleeding real bad, but I'm going to sell it like, yeah, this guy's done. I'm just going to leave him alone. So it accomplished both things it needed to. Like, it let this guy go get like a towel and try to clean things up a little bit. But it also, you know, sold Nick Jackson as like, yep, he's done. I'm just going to, you know, be a jerk and go in here and double team Kazarian. So it's basically.
Yeah, and it wasn't. And it shows how AEW has evolved as a company. Obviously, it was a tag team match, so they had a little bit more time. But you look at like how Cody Rhodes versus Jericho, like they stopped the match in that instance. But they kind of audibled it. I didn't even see like medical personnel checking on Daniels or anything.
No, I think he just rolled off to the side and just – he was very – when he eventually came back in, he had like he had wiped down because he was pretty clean until he started kind of moving again.
Still bleeding, though.
Yeah, and the blood came back. But it looked like he got a good wipe down before he went back in. But it was a lot of blood for national TV. I mean, he almost bled as much as like most people bled in Blood and Guts. So we definitely got a second act of Blood and Guts here.
I think it was borderline Dustin Rhodes versus Cody. Like, it wasn't quite as bad as Dustin in that match, but it was real close.
Yeah, so it basically let Matt and Nick double team on Kazarian through, you know, most of the match, which told a very good story. I mean, it was basically Daniels was taken out, and, you know, Frankie was having to fight through both these guys, which he actually did a really good job on. You know, and he made a comeback at the end. Daniels was able to come back in. They hit the celebrity rehab. That was a little bit before, sorry. But they came back in, and like I said, he'd wiped down a little bit. Kazarian had actually hit a Styles Clash at one point on Matt.
Yeah, that was great.
Which was awesome.
They even called it a Styles Clash.
Yeah. And they were just going back and forth. Daniels got the tag and was this was a really good sell too. I don't even know, like, it could have been a sale and it might not have been. I'm not even sure, because he was obviously losing a lot of blood, and he was almost like a half step slower on a lot of things. He went up for a best moonsault ever, and like he kind of stumbled, and he either stumbled because he had lost too much blood, it was a botch, or he might have like slipped on his own blood on the ropes. Like, there was any of the above answers would be acceptable. So, and the announcers like said it, they're like, he's lost so much blood, it affected him going up to do this moonsault. And it was probably just a botch.
Yeah, I think it was a botch, but they did a good job of covering it.
But it made sense. Like, it wasn't like a, like, it fit. It was almost better that it happened, because it fit with, you know, the struggles this guy was going through to try to fight through what he was going through with losing so much blood and just being covered. And, I mean, the Young Bucks were dressed in red, so it helped. But, I mean, at one point, like, both of them were covered in blood. Matt held Daniels up over him at one point, and he was just bleeding on his new shoes, which he pointed out.
Oh, such a great visual. The camera panned in, you can see the blood dripping on his white and red shoes. And then Matt just like looked at him, like pointed at the shoes and was like, "Hey man, what the heck?"
Yeah.
And then we got, I love sneakerhead, the Young Bucks. I think it's great.
Yeah. And then we got the, I think they had promised this on, either BT or something. They promised that they were going to do the HBK Flair, I'm sorry, I love you, when they put them to pasture, basically. So he basically sets Daniels up for this. He gets in the corner, does the I'm sorry, I love you, super kicks Daniels, goes for the pin, but Daniels kicks out, which makes Matt very angry at the referee. So he picks him up. Daniels is able to hit a Uranage, This is when he went for the BME and stumbled and was able to hit it, but Nick broke up the pin. This is when the Good Brothers came in and, you know, played distraction, but Daniels is able to, you know, take them out. That's when Matt got a spray can of the cold spray that Brandon Cutler has been using on them. He sprays Daniels in the face with it, smacks him in the head with it. They even hit Kazarian and knock him away. And he like basically gets sent to the top of the ramp, and they actually hit him with a can. They teased that it was going to be the finish, but Daniels still kicked out of it. Matt was still furious, but Nick tagged in. They picked him up, hit him with the BT trigger. Kazarian tried to run down and break up the pin, but Matt was able to hold him off, and it was too late. So SCU beaten here by the Young Bucks. They must disband, and it was a great match. But the one negative I have is right after the match, they're like, they show Kazarian, who's just like in shock in the corner. Young Bucks celebrate for a little bit, and then we go straight to the back. John Moxley and Eddie Kingston are destroying the Elite's locker room, throwing stuff around. Moxley teases he's going to go take a dump in the bathroom and stink it up. And then we go to a Christian Cage interview where he talks about Taz. And then Matt Sydal comes in and challenges him to a match next week, which we assume that this is going to be like Ricky Starks. But basically we got like, actually, I think this was after that, but we essentially got, you know, a cut from what was a big moment in like possibly the end of not only SCU, but possibly even Daniel's career. Cause he's like 50 something years old. I mean, much like Nagata. And he's got like, if you know, he's got like a job backstage. He's, you know, getting up there in years. This could have been his last match. We don't know.
He's even talked about on AEW Unrestricted how he's okay with not wrestling anymore. I think he's 52.
Yeah.
He's the head of talent relations, which was JR's job in WWF when they were WWF. So like it's a big important part of the company. He said he's okay with like if he just never wrestles again, he's fine with it because he's busy doing other things and he knows that there's younger guys that can do it better than him. So he's okay with just, you know, not wrestling anymore. And he even tweeted out after this that this might have been it. And I feel like it's, man, if this would have been WWE, they would have stayed on it. They would have milked it and they would have let all the emotion flow because that's kind of something they're good at, because they know that what wrestling is really is when it's good, it is emotion. And AEW, I guess, will learn as they go along. But it was a real fail to me that they just went away from it. And I've seen some people argue that maybe it's because Christopher Daniels was bleeding so much they didn't want the blood on the TV anymore, or they wanted to get him seen about by medical staff. But man, if they would have stayed on CD getting attended to, that would have been perfectly fine to me.
It would have been
like
better.
Seeing this broken man. Yeah, it would have been.
He literally left it all out there and had to get medical attention, and it was just, like I said, not only for Daniels, but for SCU they did come back to them and they, you know, showed them embracing each other, but it was way too short of what it should have been. And, it felt like when they cut to Moxley and Kingston, and then what we will find out later was a result of this, it felt like they were cutting to the bigger match that they're building. That's kind of what it felt like to me. And I just, after having such a great match and, you know, all the blood that Daniels shed literally for this match and for it to just cut away. And honestly, I was really disappointed that Daniels and Kazarian didn't win. I was almost hoping, by the way the match was going, I was like, this is a great story of them having to come back and, you know, possibly win. I was almost wanting them to win them here. And then the Young Bucks basically, because there were times where they obviously were heels and they could say they weren't taking things seriously, and then, you know, have their pull and get a immediate rematch at, you know, Double or Nothing, and then do the retirement there because they could do it in front of a live crowd, and, you know, they could have time to do things and not, you know, have commercial breaks and all that stuff. So I was kind of hoping they would do that. I will say I hope that Daniels does come back and do at least one more match, and I hope – What I kind of hope coming out of this is that if I were to fantasy book, I would say come back for one match and have the story be, I want to have one more match. I want to go out, win or lose, you know, how I want to go out, you know, not you know, losing like we did the Bucks. I want to go out with a great match, and I wanted to be with you, Kaz, and just have him and Kaz have a great match together. No, like bad blood, yeah. Just two friends having a, you know, match that tears the house down, and just let it be Daniel's last match.
Or, hear me out.
Okay.
They wait 90 days, and you get Christopher Daniels versus Samoa Joe versus Daniel Bryan versus CM Punk in an Ultimate X Division match. Book it, Tony Khan.
That's some wishful thinking.
Book it.
Yeah,
book it.
There's a better option, I have to admit.
Yeah, so I thought what would actually happen, I thought that the Bucks were going to win by DQ. I thought they were going to pull the DQ card. Yeah. They didn't. And I'm 100% sure they're done now. SCU's done. They're not going to renege on this stipulation. I don't think it's something Tony Khan would do. I don't think it's something that Christopher Daniels would do. I think they're done. They're done tag teaming forever. They're one of the best tag teams of all time. They've been tagging for like 10 years. It's a shame. I think it's okay that it's over. It's perfectly fine if they don't want to do it anymore. I think Kazarian is one of the best workers in the company, so he's going to have some great matches. I want to see Kazarian versus Kenny Omega, and I want to see it soon. I think that would be great. Yeah, but it really is sad. They did not really focus on it. I'm sure Christopher Daniels is going to have a singles, either a singles run or a singles farewell match. I don't know how they're going to do it. He's definitely not 100% done after this, though, I don't think. Yeah. And I would love to see him have one more match. I think your idea is great against Kazarian. Man, if we got another big debut, a Samoa Joe, a Daniel Bryan, something like that, a Bryan Danielson, I should say, I would love it if Christopher Daniels got that moment for his final match. Like if it were like, hey, I've got a final match for you all. This is my retirement match, and here's my big surprise. And out comes Samoa Joe, out comes Bryan Danielson. I think that would be a cool way to do it too.
Yeah, I think so.
And obviously you lose your retirement match, right? Generally. Mm-hmm. If he were to do that, to put over a guy coming right into the company, I think that'd be really cool. I'm not saying Daniel Bryan's going to AEW, mind you, but if I fantasy book it, you know. Even if Bryan Danielson came for one match and then never came back, you know, he's just like, I'm in between contracts, whatever.
Yeah, I think he would work with Bryan Danielson. Samoa Joe would just kill him, though. So,
yeah, it's true.
Joe would kill him. After this, we had a AEW number one contender, basically a world championship eliminator match. Orange Cassidy versus Pac. This is a good match for what it was. But then, essentially, Pac was beating the snot out of Cassidy. We had a finish that was actually an audible.
And I didn't even notice.
Yeah, they actually did a really good job covering up. I thought this was the plan all along. When I heard it was an audible, I was very shocked that it went so smoothly, because usually they do not go this smoothly. It was able to make sense. They're having a really good match. They're supposed to go to a draw between these two.
20-minute time limit draw, yeah.
It would go to a time limit draw, which would result in Orange Cassidy and Pac, you know, not determining a number one contender, and they would basically both face Kenny Omega at Double or Nothing. But what happened was Pac super kicks Orange Cassidy and either like rung his bell then or like
no, it was the seated powerbomb.
Yeah, well, so the super kick was like bad, but then he followed it up with a powerbomb that basically Cassidy landed like on his head and neck and just got destroyed. Mm-hmm. So if it wasn't the super kick that actually did it, it was definitely the powerbomb.
So a lot of people are. A lot of people bash AEW. It's like, who's it going to take dying in AEW for them to ban moves or whatever? Like, it's wrestling. Things happen, right?
Yeah.
Injuries happen. However, do people really need to be doing seated power bombs? Like, there's been a lot of careers ended by that specific move. And it's not saying that no one could do it, but like, it's if it goes bad, it goes bad. It is wrestling. I get it, but scary move. I mean, I don't know. it's
yeah, just the powerbomb in general is injured many people. So
yeah, like WWE doesn't do tombs or doesn't do pile drivers anymore. They don't do seated power bombs, I don't believe, either. No, because Keith Lee's finisher is a seated power bomb, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. It just it's scary.
Yeah. So so he took the seated power bomb and got his bell rung. We went to a commercial break, and during the break, Cassie was checked on by officials. And basically, I think he was trying to stall because he knew the end was supposed to be a draw. So they tried to kind of stall it out, but then they decided, like, no, we got to change something up because we can't let you keep going on. Because basically, Pac was just beating the snot out of the guy. So it's like, if you keep going, you know, Pac's going to keep beating on you. So we got to figure out something else. So basically, the audible was Don Callis came out and started taunting Pac. It basically became a distraction to Aubrey. Aubrey came in and, you know, held Don Callis back from getting in the ring. Pac was distracted. Kenny jumped the guardrail, came in and hit him with the belt, knocked him out. And Aubrey was able to turn around, count everybody out for the 10 count. So we ended up with the draw. I mean, it was still no contest. So they still accomplished the same finish. It wasn't like they had a screw job finish or anything. It was still the same finish they wanted, but it sold that, you know, Kenny didn't want to face either of these guys. And so he came in and, especially Pac, but so he hit Pac with the belt. And afterwards, so we get, you know, no contests. Callis points out on the mic, he's like, oh, there's no winner. Both these guys are losers. So that means Omega's got the night off. When who comes around the corner with Tony Schiavone and says, no. It's been decided that since there was no winner due to Omega's interference, it will indeed be a three-way for the world championship at Double or Nothing with Omega going up against both Pac and Cassidy. So it really worked out.
And like there was – Callis came out and actually like cut a promo talking about how there was no winner. So obviously Kenny Omega doesn't have to face anybody at Double or Nothing. They're taking the night off. Yep. There was some really great banter between him and Kenny. Like I never would have guessed this was an audible. They did a really good job of covering it up.
Yeah.
As soon as he told Omega, Omega flips out, he loses his cool. He says, we're getting out of here. We're going back to Winnipeg, which is a Simpsons reference. And, I thought it was a great segment and I was surprised to see a double count out. And I like it when it happens every once in a while. Yeah. I'm totally fine with being surprised.
Yeah.
And, I would have been okay with a DQ earlier in the night. Like it just doesn't have to happen every episode for three of the matches.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a really good match at pay-per-view too. So,
it's the first ever AEW World Championship triple threat.
And it's also going to be interesting to see how they handle, is it going to be like the WWE no disqualification triple threat, like the champion doesn't have to get pinned, or is it going to be like a three-way dance rule where it's like elimination? Basically, when one guy gets pinned, it's down to the other two, which I'm more in favor of that. Because
yeah, I like the Eliminator better.
I don't like the champion losing without getting pinned. It's just kind of a cop out. So I
think they'll probably follow that rule set though, because they do the same thing with the Fatal Four Ways, where it's no DQ, only one person has to get pinned, yada yada.
Yeah.
And I think the way the match should end, if I were fantasy booking it this far in advance, I think Pac should hit Orange Cassidy with the Black Arrow. Kenny should throw Pac off of Orange Cassidy, go for the pin. Orange Cassidy should kick out, and then Kenny should pick him up for the One Winged Angel, get the pin. He wins. That's the way I would book it, because I think that makes everybody look strong. I think that'd be a good way to end it. I don't know how they're going to do it. We'll see.
Yeah, but
I'm sure they have a better idea than I do.
Yeah, but it was a good match, but I think the pay-per-view match is going to be better, and hopefully Cassidy is not, you know, more permanently hurt. Because as we saw, Ricky Starks, he, you know, seemed okay after his match, but, you know, ended up with a fractured neck. So hoping that everything's good with Orange and he makes, you know, makes it.
If Orange Cassidy cannot make it to Double or Nothing, I'm putting in my request right now, Tony Khan, you have to have Chuck Taylor as his substitute, because that is Kenny Omega's former tag team partner. in PWG. They were the men of low moral fiber, and that would be great.
You would, you wouldn't want Trent?
No, has to be Chuck. Has to be Chuck, okay. Former tag teammate, going to hit him with the awful waffle. I think it would be real fun. But hopefully Orange Cassidy is okay and he can wrestle.
Yeah, no, I agree. So then after this, is we got the follow-up to the Young Bucks coming in, just discovering that their locker room was destroyed. So they somehow know that it's Moxley and Kingston. I mean, maybe they saw a replay of it or something. I don't know. But they know it's them. So they say they're fighting champions. So next week, they're going to defend their titles against the Varsity Blondes, who are ranked number one, apparently.
Yeah, my reaction was, what? They've never...
I was like, what? Well, so, you just ranked number one? I mean, I know they lost,
yes.
But...
So Varsity Blondes have never won a tag team match on Dynamite.
Yeah. That was odd.
Never. I mean, they've been winning a lot of Elevation Dark matches or whatever, but they were like, yeah, they're the number one ranked. I was like, what?
And then right after that, they went on to challenge Moxley and Kingston to a, well, they said called a super kick party at Double or Nothing, which sounded like they were challenging them for the titles. And I was like, okay, why can't you just challenge Moxley and Kingston and build up to that? For like, yeah.
They should have waited until next week.
Yeah. Just cut a promo next week. And
like, it's been obvious for the past few weeks. That's what they're leading to. But they definitely should have waited.
Yeah. So I'm guessing we're going to have the tag team champions of the Young Bucks versus Moxley and Kingston at Double or Nothing. And Varsity Blondes probably not looking so good for them next week.
Now, they could surprise us. They could pull off the old Moxley Kingston Varsity Blonde pay-per-view match, you know?
There is a loose cannon in the match, so it's possible.
Oh, and Matt Jackson was like talking about how Brian Pillman wanted to be like his daddy and everything. And I was like, oh, man, these heel bucks are so good.
Everybody's really leaning into this Dark Side of the Ring thing that's come out about Pillman.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I guess we'll get that match next week. And then I'm assuming we'll get the match Double or Nothing. But then we had Hangman flanked by the Dark Order. Now, I like this promo. Basically, talks about his loss to Brian Cage and says, you know, Brian Cage did beat him, but it also took three men beating him down before the match. And he says he knows it wasn't Cage that really took him out, but Taz and Team Taz. So he said, Cage, you know, if you can live with that, fine, but I don't think you can. So if, you know, you want to take me on and get a real win against me, I'm challenging you to Double or Nothing. Basically called it, you know, a Double or Nothing match, saying that it's me and you one-on-one, no Team Taz at ringside, no Dark Order ringside. And so we'll wait and see, I guess, what Brian Cage, if he accepts. But the one thing that confused me, like, I get that, like, Hangman and the Dark Order, like, they're fun together and all this, but he turned them down to, and, like, he's, like, just in their group. Like, I don't understand it. Like, I get
he's not in the Dark Order. He's just friends with them.
So what, but what is the point of him joining the Dark Order then? Like, I don't get what the difference is.
Cause then he gets a cool mask and a name, a number. I mean,
not necessarily. He could just be the Hangman.
He could just be Colt Cabana. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. Like it's, I mean, listen, I like the Dark Order. I love Hangman. I don't mind them being together, but they did a whole thing where he like turned them down. And I know they were like helping him out and trying to like, it seemed like they were trying to win him back. And we're like staying in his good graces, hoping that one day that he would change his mind. But like,
it feels like, I mean, they did a whole thing on BTE. They did a whole thing on BTE where he was like talking about how he wouldn't join him or whatever. And they're like, we could still hang out, you know, like we still have fun together. We could still be friends. And that's kind of what they've been running with, which I know they should put that kind of stuff on Dynamite.
Or at least explain.
I did love how it ended with like Hangman perfectly working in the Double or Nothing line. Yes. How saying it's like, I guess you could say it's Double or Nothing. And then John Silver's like, oh, like the pay-per-view. Oh, that's great. That's such a clever line. And everybody's like, oh, clapping for Hangman. They're like, did you come up with that on your own? And Hangman's like, yeah, I did. This was really funny.
Yeah, they're great together. But like I said, they kind of made it seem like he didn't want to be with the group. And he's still hanging out with the group. So, yeah, that's the only thing. Like, either just let him join the Dark Order or, you know, let him be a lone wolf for a while. So, well, or a lone cowboy, I should say.
He will eventually be alone again, I think. I don't know, though. Maybe he'll win the AEW champion with the help of the Dark Order. I was kind of
looking forward to him not wanting to be with the Dark Order and then, you know, staying close to him and helping him out until finally he, like, the triumphant moment where he changed his mind and decided to trust the group again and join the Dark Order, and everybody would pop for it and it would be a happy moment. But I guess he's just with him now again. So, well, I don't know. We'll see. But it was a good promo. I'm all for another Brian Cage and Hangman match. I think this is going to be the real Brian Cage and Hangman match, because obviously Hangman was just destroyed last time. So I think this will be a little bit more even and should be awesome. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too.
So after this, we got the Pinnacle coronation. We got a recap of Blood and Guts. Pinnacle came out. They were flanked by a bunch of good looking Jacksonville women. They all got in the ring. There's like a little table set up in there. They're all dressed to the nines in suits. MJF's got a scarf, obviously. Says he took Jericho's spot. He's the new demo god. Touts, you know, AEW being the number one ranked cable show last week. He says they also broke a record in Canada and said it was all thanks to the Canadian god Sean Spears, which was hilarious. Then he talked about how the Inner Circle was only down. Basically, they were down two men because, you know, one of them stabbed MJF and the other one got shoved off the cage. He asked the crowd, do you want to see the rematch? All the fans are obviously chanting yes, but MJF says, nah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
So, which, I mean, everybody knew was coming. We then got Tully. He cut a little promo here saying, how, you know, great they were and said that he had a gift for them. He brings out a bunch of little boxes, reveals that they are these beautiful watches that he's bought for everybody. They're getting them out. They're celebrating. And basically says, whenever you look down at these, yes, they're nice watches, but you will see that this is a present from Tully Blanchard. And it's what being in the Pinnacle is all about. When all of a sudden we get interrupted by this loud horn, and it takes them a second, but finally MJF is like, what is that horn? What is this? What is going on? Who is this? Who's interrupting? And we get Ortiz, Hager, and Sammy Guevara on this vehicle pulling up, and Guevara's like on a gunner seat of some kind. And so they're pulling up in this thing, just honking this loud horn. They pull off. MJF tells them to beat it because the Inner Circle is dead. When all of a sudden, who pops out from the back of the vehicle but Chris Jericho? Now, he's got his arm wrapped up because they did mention earlier that his arm was all busted up. So he's got the cast on his arm. He's got like got a support on it and everything. Like
he looks like the Million Dollar Man, like, or the Hundred Million Dollar Man, not the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, the Bionic Man.
Yeah, so Jericho's all taped up. He asked for the rematch. MJF says no. And Jericho says, all right, let me make this clear. You are saying no to the rematch. And MJF repeats and says no. And so Jericho says, all right, get him, Sammy. And Sammy starts spraying down the Pinnacle with, I forgot to say, they had like a sign on the back that said the bubbly and had Chris Jericho's logo on it. So obviously it was a truck with a hose going to this gunner seat that, you know, Sammy was in. So he was spraying the bubbly all over the Pinnacle. It was very much a, like, you know, Stone Cold, you know, with the beer truck spraying down the corporation and the McMahons. And they're like, you know, selling it. They're flopping all over the place. MJF, well, my favorite part was he sprayed everybody down. Everybody's selling it. They got down, like a lot of people got out of the ring. Sammy basically pretty much stopped spraying in the ring. MJF gets back up on his feet, and then he like turns this hose back on Sammy, and Sammy takes like the greatest bump. Like he just got clotheslined by this water, this geyser of water that's getting sprayed at him, a bubbly.
Yeah.
Is hilarious.
I feel like there was either two reactions. People were like, oh, they're doing the water spot again, or oh, they're doing the water spot again. Like that's the two reactions. I love it. I think it's great. It's such a wrestling cliche.
It's,
but like, I like it. I think it's funny.
Yeah. I mean, it's goofy and it's been done before, but it's wrestling. It's fun. Like enjoy it. Like it's meant to be over the top. It's the heels getting humiliated. Like it's supposed to be like this. Like, you know, chill out. It's fun. So he took a huge, you know, flop bump for it. It was actually funny because Wardlow was like, wasn't taking a bump. Like, he was just kind of like, he was blocking it from MJF getting hit by it. But finally, MJF loses it. He's like all the way on the other side of the ring in the corner. He grabs the mic, tells the crowd to shut up. He's like, all right, Inner Circle, if you want a rematch, you got it. And the crowd cheers. He says, oh, wait, hold on real quick before you cheer this. It's a rematch, but it's got to be the same match that you lost last year. Stadium Stampede. And if you lose this match, you have to break up forever. And all the Inner Circle look worried. And I guess we'll find out next week. They don't give a straight answer. They look kind of concerned. Yeah. Like, they got to think about it. So, yeah, I like this segment a lot.
I thought this segment was great. I'm super stoked for another Stadium Stampede. I hope they do it every year at Double or Nothing. I think they should, like, if they have two big factions every year that would fit it, I think they should definitely do it. I would love to see the Dark Order in one. Maybe the Dark Order versus the Elite at the next Double or Nothing. That would be great.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I don't really like the stipulation because it really does tell me I think the Inner Circle is going to win, because I don't think at this point they would have them break up or if they just got back together. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, we just had the same stip on the same show like a couple matches earlier of a team having to break up.
I don't love breakup stipulations unless they actually go through with it, which they did with SCU. Hey, I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, I thought the segment was great, though. Thought Tully did great. Thought MJF did great. I liked him putting over Sean Spears. I know it's kind of like a poo-poo, Sean Spears sucks, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, I like Sean Spears, and I hope to see him getting more and more attention.
Yeah. No, I liked it. The only thing I didn't like was Jericho coming back so soon, because, I mean, he pretty much died last
Jericho
week.
Jericho shouldn't have been there. It should have been Ortiz on the mic, in my opinion.
Yeah, so, and then, like, you know, it would be something that, like, they might even have to wait until Jericho gets back, or, you know, them at least knowing that Jericho and Santana, you know, may not even be 100% healthy, and, you know, they have to wait until they could all regroup to talk about it. So Jericho coming back really didn't change much with, you know, they could have accomplished the exact same thing with the segment, and it kind of just ruined the, I mean, his arm was taped up, but I mean, dude got shoved off the top of the cage. Like, he should be dead for a couple weeks and then make his triumphant return. And even MJF was teasing the ring. He's like, Jericho's gone forever. And the reason for that is usually, you know, the heel's full of it. So Jericho's going to be back at some point, but it's really meant to build anticipation for when he actually comes back. And it should be.
Saw him peeking too before. Like, you could see Jericho peeking in the background behind the Polaris Ranger. Like, he was like, oh, is there Jericho? He's going to be popping up.
Yeah. So funny. That was the only downside of it. But all in all, I enjoyed the segment. It was fun. So then we got Britt Baker with a sit down interview with JR.
I love these.
Yeah. And Britt Baker's awesome. So she's once again doing excellent. She talks about, you know, Sheeta breaking her nose and busting her open. Talking about that it was poetic because it created a monster basically, and basically the monster is going to destroy her. Jarrah asked if she was taking it too far, and Britt basically, you know, said that she was a role model and she's the heart and soul of the division, and she said she was the pulse, and when you have a pulse, you don't need a machine to keep alive, and Double Nothing, the division, is going to be kept alive when she becomes champion. So,
yeah, she also mentioned how JR asked her about Hikaru Shida breaking her nose and how she was out for 5 months after that, and how ever since then she became the baddest woman in AEW, blah, blah, blah. But she talks about how, those 5 months that she was off, that's when the women's division really started to fall. That's when all these things started to happen. But she's back. She's ready to take the championship, and she's ready to be the true face of the division with the title. And I was like, you know what? She's not wrong. Go ahead and give it to her.
Yeah.
Like, she just had a year.
Yeah.
She's done great. She did a great job carrying the championship. She's going to have what she wanted, which was a 100% capacity crowd with her as champion. And it's time to move on. Britt Baker is the way to go. Give it to her.
And I think Sheeta, I think she's it's really her time to, you know, pass it on. And I think she could kind of take this time because she's really just been the same Sheeta since she's had the championship. I would like to see her kind of, you know, lose this to Britt, let Britt kind of go on to some other programs and let Sheeta kind of reinvent herself and, you know, start to do more, you know, things to build her character and just strengthen the division even more. And, you know, one day it's a rematch that you could build up to. That could be really great if that happens. So, yeah, I think it's getting ready for the time for Britt to finally take the spot. And this segment really proved it. She did really great. One thing, though.
And Sheeta wasn't even on this episode.
Yeah. One thing, though, I will say, Britt Baker failed to do something. She failed to mention Thunder Rosa, which is interesting. And what I think is going to be her first major feud after winning the title, because she didn't mention her, but clearly Thunder Rosa, the last time they met, you know, beat her. I know it was a non-sanctioned match, but Thunder Rosa has got an argument to say, hey, I should be number one contender. I beat this woman fair and square. And we also got further proof that she's bad because she came out here and destroyed Jasmine Allure in a squash match. So they talked about her potentially facing Serena Deeb for the NWA Women's Championship. And I will say there is like another, you know, wrench in the equation because Thunder Rosa is apparently going to face Camille on NWA television. And if she loses to her, she could potentially not go outside of NWA to compete in wrestling matches. So I don't know what's going to happen there, but it appeared that they're possibly setting up for if, you know, she can still, she has the ability to go to other companies. It looks like they might be possibly setting up Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker down the line, which I'm totally fine with.
Yeah. I think it'll be great.
We then got a stupid Jade Cargill interview again.
Yeah. What a trash segment this was.
Another one.
It's so stupid.
This is the new Sting and Team Taz segment. Like it's been three weeks of the exact same thing.
And it's like she's getting worse. Like, I like Jade Cargill. I thought she was great there for a few weeks. But I was like, oh my God, I'm sick of seeing Jade Cargill talk about how she's that B-word and she doesn't need a manager. It's like, okay, why do you keep asking her? She keeps saying she doesn't need a manager. Why do you keep asking her?
Yeah, it's basically she's getting interviewed by Tony Schiavone. And Tony says, Mark Sterling offered to be your manager. What do you think? She's like, yeah, I handle my own business. I'm my own boss because I'm that B. And that's it. It's just like, it's just ridiculous. Like, I don't know where this is going. If she ends up getting a manager, I'm going to be furious. It's just like, just let her kill some managers.
You know what they should do? They should have her like deck Vicky Guerrero and set up her versus Nyla.
Or even better, have her deck Matt Hardy. I can see Matt Hardy going and finally getting mad at her.
She can take Matt Hardy.
Yeah, she'd get over. Like, she'd look awesome. Like, just decking him and knocking. Like, you know, he's a heel. He could do it. So, yeah, I don't know what these segments are doing. It's just pointless. I'm over it. It's done. We then got an awesome video package before the main event. Darby Allin. They recapped him being thrown down the stairs last week. But then Darby is like, he's in Seattle. He says he didn't have time to worry about it. He went back home, reminds him how far he's come. He talks about Miro saying, what have you done since you got here? You were playing video games, got you nowhere. You were a best man, got you nowhere. Now you're just generic, which I don't really agree with, but he says that you won't take his championship. No matter what happens, Miro will have to admit that Darby's one of the toughest men when he steps in the ring with him. This match in the main event, Miro versus Darby Allin, was awesome. I love this. What did you think, Micah?
I thought this was great. Talking about the match or the promo specifically?
Well, both, but the match really.
The promo was great. I think Darby always does great with these promos.
Yeah.
I think this was Miro's best match of his career.
Yeah.
I don't think it's even close. Like, he had some great matches with John Cena, I know, but like, this was it.
And Darby was great too. It's one of his best matches, I think. Just from a storytelling
standpoint. Oh, yeah. He's the reason that Miro looked so great. I mean, if if Miro would have been facing somebody that can't bump like Darby Allin, that can't sell like Darby Allin, this would not have played the way it did. It only worked because both parties were perfect for their role. This was more Darby than it was Miro, but you can't have it without Miro because he is the crazy strong brute of a man, right? Mm. So it worked perfectly for me. I loved it, man. My favorite spot of the entire show was when that Tope Suicida by Darby Allin. And like, I get so sick of seeing Tope Suicidas, right? Like, they're played over and over again. Like, it's a freaking, like, it's a wrist lock now. Like, it's just a thing that everybody does all the time.
Yeah.
But Darby Allin hits a Tope Suicida like you should. Like, a real, I mean, he really did hit him with a Tope Suicida. He just threw his body at him and he ping-ponged off of him.
Yeah.
Like, he hit him and just, like, went the other direction. Like, it was perfect. Somebody actually edited it to have like the Sonic the Hedgehog, like when he hit him and like the rings go everywhere. I thought it was great. I loved that spot. I thought the whole match was great. I think Darby did a great job of selling. I think a lot of people underestimate how good of a technical wrestler Darby Allin is.
Yeah.
And he just did so phenomenally with that. He did a great job of selling his arm. He bumped like crazy for Miro. This match obviously had like a pre-match beatdown that went on for like, I want to say like 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
A lot of people were saying that's to make up for the time of Orange Cassidy versus Pac. But I think that was probably the plan to begin with. It just makes sense for Miro.
Yeah.
But also it definitely cemented the story of the match for me. So I think it all worked out great if it was an audible. There was a great moment in the match when Darby Allin's just getting the snot beat out of him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he like looks helpless. Like, his facial expressions are so good too. Like, him and Hangman are like the two people that like sell it for their faces throughout the match to me.
Yeah.
And he like looks over at Sting and like they give each other a little fist bump and he gets back in it and it's like, yeah, Darby, get it. And there's really, really good spots in the match. What I didn't like about the match is the Ethan Page Scorpio Sky interruption for no reason. It's just like, this is stupid. I don't like they didn't ruin the match for me, obviously, but they're like a little stain on the match. Like, oh, that's going to be forever in this match. This is a great match. This is a storied match that I think is going to be look like Cody versus Brody. Brody, whenever Brody squashed Cody, is going to be like in 20 years when people were talking about the history of the TNT title, they're going to be like, top moment. It's going to be that one, right?
Yeah.
This could have been an easy second, but I think that little interaction does bump it down. Maybe not. We'll see.
Yeah, I didn't like it either. Trust me, but it didn't take away from me any bit of the match. Like it was there, but and mainly because it happened. I think it happened during the commercial break. It was like picture in picture, and they took out Sting or something. So it wasn't even didn't even play that big into the match. But yeah,
and Sting did get back up.
He did. So. He did sell it a little later, but yeah, it was. It was this match was awesome. I think Darby Allin, I think one reason he's so over and is, I mean, he moves the ratings. Like he's a ratings draw for this company. It's been proven. So I think one thing that has been so successful with him, I think he, like, to me, he reminds me a lot of Rey Mysterio in a sense that Rey Mysterio did a lot of amazing things in the ring, which also helped him and helped him get over, like being able to do like, you know, the crazy Hurricanranas and all the lucha stuff. But one thing that made Rey Mysterio great, he could do all that, but even in his matches, he was always the underdog. Still to this day, he's the underdog. Cause he's smaller than everybody, but you know that he's always in the fight because of his skills. And Darby is the exact same way in a different, slightly different way. But he's always in the fight because he's so crazy and so headstrong that he can get up from a beating like this and still come back, put together a series of moves and pick up the win. Like you know that he's always still in the fight at some point. And
yeah. And they've done a great job on commentary of putting that over as well.
Yeah. And really he got the snot beat out of him before the match, during the match, Miro was just killing the guy. Miro had, I forgot to mention as well. Miro had the TNT championship on his tights. Like, I mean, that was the ultimate heel move. It's like Rick Rude.
It was great.
Like a belt on his tights or something, like painting it on there, or painting his opponent's face on his trunks, that type of stuff. Like just the total heel move. I loved it. And even the announcers pointed out how cocky it was. And Miro just killing this guy the whole match. As you said, you know, to the point where, you know, Darby Allin just like looked at Sting and Sting was just like, dude, you got to get up. Like, you know, just, he just like looked such pain, looked at Sting and he knew he had to get up and fight. And he got up and made his comeback. It was awesome. He went for a coffin drop at one point. He basically hit Miro with a bunch of stunners, like countered a bunch of moves into stunners, hit a coffin drop, but got caught. He tried to hit the German, but he flipped through it. He rolled up Miro for a really close near fall, hit a code red for another near fall, but Miro was able to pop up, put him in the game over and like lean back on him. So his legs were like trapped underneath him. And just basically the one slight negative, other than obviously the like run in that was mid match, that was like completely pointless. The one negative is that the referee rang the bell really quickly. I don't know if it's because they were going up the air pretty soon and they wanted to make sure they can get all the aftermatch stuff in, even though it wasn't a lot, but the referee just like rang that, but like Darby still had his hand in the air and like, he wasn't like if this were MMA, that would have been a quick stoppage that the guy could probably be mad about. Like he didn't tap, like let the guy pass out and let his arm fall to that. So, you know, the guy's out before you ring the bell, but the referee rang a little bit too soon. So it put a little bit of damper on the finish, but it honestly still didn't take away from the match as a whole. I love this match. Miro finally is the champion. And I saw somebody like say that this should have happened like right when Miro got in, like he's been doing nothing for so long. Like, you know, he should have been this from the moment he came into AEW, he should have won the belt. And I'm like, no, this was perfect timing not. Because you got to think back when he first came into AEW, he was Twitch streamer gaming Miro. And it wasn't,
you don't want that Miro as TNT.
It wasn't over. And he's still kind of that cocky character. And he's still like a part of his character, you know, in a sense, but it's not his whole character. He's built on it. And this version of Miro is the best version of Miro and is the one who should have won this title. I thought it was perfect timing. It's great. And Darby, you got a rematch, you know, later down the road. I don't think he should have immediately rematched. He should go off with like maybe I think Archer might be going after Miro next, which I kind of don't want to see because I don't want to see Lance Archer lose. But I think I want to see Miro have a good run. But I want to see, you know, Darby go off and, you know, have another program and work back up to the title, because I think, you know, him going back and challenging Miro down the road, it would be a great match. So another great match. So thumbs up for me.
Yeah.
And all in all, I thought the show was really great. Like, I mean, there really weren't any major weak points. There were a couple segments like the Jade Cargill that was completely pointless. But other than that, like every segment on the show to me was either, I mean, at worst, it was okay. Like, you know, like, and the stuff that was like, okay, was so minimal. Like everything else was great on the show. I really liked it. So that being said, I'm like, I'll go and give my rating and then I'll let you take it away. But all in all, I'm going to give the show an A. I just really enjoyed it. I thought everything, like all the matches were just great. I enjoyed every bit of it. And from start to finish, I liked it. So I'm going to give it an A.
Yeah. So like going into this episode, like I know the card was stacking everything, but I didn't have like huge high hopes of it. Like I have from some other episodes, maybe that helped out. But man, like throughout this whole show, like me and my wife were watching and she looked at me and was like, this is a really good show, right? And I was like, yeah, this is great. And we're watching it and we're watching it. And like, yeah, it had the Jade Cargill segment. It had the minor imperfections. And I know I always say, if I can find an imperfection, I don't give it an A+. So yeah, maybe it deserves an A. But looking back at it, this is one of the best episodes of Dynamite I think I've ever watched. Like it was just top to bottom, so good. I loved it. It felt like a big show. It felt like they really knew what they were doing throughout the whole show. And also, there's a lot of people that didn't like the Cody segment. And screw them. I'm giving it an A+.
Oh, nice.
I think it was an A+ show.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is only the second ever A+ I've given to a Dynamite.
I want to save my A+ is for like, you know, 6-star, 5-star plus shows. So I wouldn't give it an A+ just because it still had some negatives on it, but they were so tiny. Like you can't give it lower than an A. So yeah, it's A or A+. I won't argue either one. I think
it's like a 97. It's not 100.
Yeah.
It's like a 97.
It's right up there. So I can't argue with you. So really great show. I'm looking forward to next week. And just really good all around. So let us know what you guys think, though. We're always open to hearing what you guys think in the comments. And, you know, you can send us a message. We always love to hear from you guys. And, we will be back same time next week. So check out for our next show. We're getting closer to that 200, as we said. So we hope you guys are enjoying the show. Like I said, let us know what you think. You can follow us on Facebook if you're not already, at Wrestle Life Radio, and on Instagram as well at Wrestle Life Radio, Wrestle Life Pod on Twitter. You can follow Matt on Twitter and Instagram at Wrestle Life Matt. You can follow me on Instagram at Kyle.Polly. Micah shows up on the Facebook from time to time. So we appreciate you guys for listening each week. Love to hear from you. Share with your friends if you like the show. We appreciate it. And we'll see you guys same time next week.
Yeah. Cody's still a heel, though.
I guess he is. We'll talk about that too next week, I guess. The fall off from that. But all right, guys. We'll see you guys next week. Appreciate it. Thanks.